After months of sometimes nasty campaigning, the Florida primary is here. It's election day. The polls are open. Get out and vote. Increase that turnout and call us here this election morning. We are live from Studio 5 for First Coast Connect on 89.9, and thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross. The show is always live at 9. Also, you can get our podcast anytime you want at iTunes and Stitcher. Well, it's election day, and the polls have been open since 7 a.m. as voters select nominees for governor and other statewide races. Fifth District Democrats will decide between incumbent Congressman Al Lawson and former Jacksonville Mayor Alvin Brown. There are also local races for judge and Duval County tax collector. By the way, you can get on the line now as we talk about all this at 549-2937. Now, there have been other races that have caught our eye, too. Open seats for governor, attorney general, and agriculture commissioner. Here are a few other contests. State Senator Aaron Bean is being challenged in his Republican primary by longtime rival Carlos Slay. State Representative Kimberly Daniels has a challenger in her Democratic primary. It's Duval County School Board Chair Paula Wright. There are also three open school board seats on the ballot in Duval County. Now, more people voted early or by mail this year across the state of Florida than in previous elections. But on the actual day, today, voter turnout is expected to be lower than elections officials had hoped. Here with more about all of these races and the state of play on this election day, we're pleased to welcome Mike Bender, political science professor at UNF. He also runs the school's public opinion research lab. Mike, always good to see you. Good morning.
Oh, good morning. Thanks for having me back. It's been a while.
It has been a while. And we're talking election news this morning with Mike. Have you already voted? Are you voting today? What race is most important to you? Give us a call at 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Or go online, send your emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Tweets to @MelissaInJax, or let us know your thoughts on our Facebook page. All right, so it's drizzling out there. Turnout is expected to be kind of low today, but it's still a dramatic primary today, Mike. Headlined, of course, by the fiercely contested primary fights for the governor's race here in Florida. Let's start with that. As we watch the polling and the 11th hour movements of the candidates, we had a wrench thrown into the works at the last minute as this horrific event happened Sunday at the Jacksonville Landing, a shooting incident that killed two people. Then the gunman killed himself. The Democrats for governor raced to Jacksonville to talk about this. The Republicans canceled their events in Jacksonville. It's just one example of the difference between the parties and the candidates as voters go to the polls today. What were your thoughts about that, first off?
Yeah, depending upon the tragedy, different parties are going to do different things. And Democrats came racing in. Chris King was here. Gillum came. Everybody kind of descended on the city. Unfortunately, you'd think just from the outside that maybe they're trying to do this for political advantage, and they certainly are. But to some extent, there's some real arguments to be had here about gun control in this state. And for the first time in a long time, all of the parties, all the candidates on the Democratic side coalesced are around some form of increased gun control in the state. Republicans, DeSantis and Putnam, have largely avoided that, very pro Second Amendment.
Right.
And I'm not sure that that's going to play a great deal into today's election. Most of the votes have already been cast. Democrats tend to think the same. Republicans tend to think the same. I don't think that's going to impact it. But come November, these types of issues are not going away. And sadly, there's a chance we might have another one before November.
I know that's the fear, certainly, and the sad reality of where we are with that issue. And it's 549-2937. Give us a call on this election day. Okay, so let's talk about the likely victors in both primary contests for governor. On the GOP side, it's a two-way battle between Congressman Ron DeSantis and Agriculture Commissioner Adam Putnam. It looks likely that DeSantis will be the Republican nominee for governor. He hails from this area down in the Daytona Beach, Palm Coast area is his district. And then on the Democratic side, former Congresswoman Gwen Graham, likely to best her four male colleagues, although the polls are tightening, but it's likely that she will be the Democratic nominee for governor.
Yeah, these races are surprisingly competitive. Adam Putnam essentially has been running for governor for a decade plus in a lot of ways, some would think. And Trump getting involved in supporting DeSantis, tweeting on his behalf both a month or so ago and again over the last day or two, that has buoyed his campaign and given him the attention that he needed and outside money to compete. I think it's going to be closer than other people think. I think DeSantis is probably a favorite, but I think he's a slight favorite.
You don't think it'll be a blowout?
I don't think this is going to be a 60-40 kind of election. I think it'll be closer than that for sure.
And then for the Democrats, as I said, the likely nominee is Gwen Graham, but it's not over till it's over.
Right. And again, with five candidates in the race, all of which are drawing some poll numbers, you're not going to need 40% to win that race. 30% could get it done. And in that case, you have to start looking at some other folks that maybe have some strong support among their base, like a Gillum. Green and Levine down in South Florida have canceled each other out. Green stepping away from the campaign the last day or two. I'm not sure how that's going to impact the vote, where his votes would go necessarily. Even Chris King, who was here yesterday on the steps of City Hall, those are votes that are going to be spread out. Now, the Democrats are an interesting case because better than 60% of the ballots cast have been women so far up to this point. And you'd think that that would probably lean toward helping Graham.
Okay. Some other races on the ballot. There is a spirited contest between Congressman Al Lawson, who represents Florida's 5th congressional district. It runs from Jacksonville West to Tallahassee. He has a challenger, former Jacksonville Mayor Alvin Brown. Lawson favored to win, according to the recent polls, although Alvin Brown trying to run up his vote totals here in Duval County as much as he can.
Absolutely. And spirited's a kind word for that race.
Yeah.
It's gotten ugly in certain circumstances. UNF ran a poll a week or two ago that came out and had Lawson ahead by 20 points. And the real difference between these two candidates, forget policy differences, but when it comes to vote gathering, is inside Duval County, Alvin Brown's winning by, 20-25%. The problem is outside of Duke County, his name recognition is limited and Lawson's winning by 60-70%. And that's just too much to overcome.
We'll keep watching that. And then there are some other undercard type of races that people need to research and pay attention to. Primaries for the Florida legislature. There's a four-way race for Duval County tax collector, three Republicans and one Democrat, 17 candidates for three open Duval County school board seats, and some judicial races. We don't always get the chance to vote on who will represent us on the bench. These judicial candidates are on the ballot too.
Right. And the one thing about this is you don't have to be a Democrat or a Republican to vote for these people. And these people have meaningful impacts in your life. If you pay property taxes in Duval County, it's important that the property tax office works well and our tax collector is running a ship there. There's over 200 employees making your process of paying taxes easier. So you can be an MPA. Go vote.
Vote.
Have your voice heard. There's four candidates, different backgrounds, varying degrees of political experience. So I think that's an important race to think about. And of course, these judicial nominees. I consider myself a fairly informed voter, somebody that pays attention. We know often very little about these judicial candidates, but there are opportunities and places you can go. They all have websites. And additionally, Channel 4, News for Jax, they have a great voter's guide.
We have one too, by the way.
Does JCT.
Right. If you go to wjct.org/elections. We have a comprehensive voter's guide for you before you vote today with a look at the positions and background of all the candidates, not just in Duval County, but area counties as well. So check that out if you get a minute.
There's information out there because oftentimes you hear people complain, I don't know anything about these judges. I'm not going to vote for them. Well, it's 2018, folks. This isn't 1945.
Yeah, like, look it up.
You can look on your phone while you're waiting to vote. It's so easy to do nowadays. And you don't need to know everything, but you might need to know something. For a judicial candidate, maybe it's where they got their law degree from. Maybe it's the type of law that they practice. Any type of information can help you and make the decision as opposed to just maybe looking at somebody's name and inferring from that.
Let's go to your calls now on this primary election day. Have you voted? Are you going to vote today? The polls are open till 7 p.m. tonight. What are your questions? 549-2937. Kumri is in Jacksonville. Kumri, hello. Good morning.
Yes, good morning to you.
Hi, go ahead.
Yes, yeah. My concern, like, you know, that we really like to... I'm a little confused now after yesterday's incident at Jacksonville landing. And so, you know, that the politicians, all the politicians, Republicans and the Democrats, you know, when all this, the time to vote, and they're all, you know, busy talking about all those things. But they talk the talk sometimes, but they don't, I don't see they walk the walk. But, you know, that we are very nervous. Like, you know, although we are, you know, putting all these people to serve us, but whether are they doing the job right? And, you know, that they all need to come together and prove us, like, you know, how they are going to eliminate this problem, like the gun violence. And, you know, we have kids in school, so, you know, every day we are scared until they come home, whether are they safe. You know, that these are the things that we need to talk about. Not, we don't have to wait till the election. Now they're waiting for another one. Now all these things that happened yesterday was gone. Like, I feel like, yeah, nobody cares. It happened. The people died and the people lost their loved ones. But what is next? So who is going to fix that problem? And also, we do not care about, you know, how many women that Trump had or how what is going on with the Russians. And that don't bother us. Fix the problems we have that nobody trying to fix. They are spending so many years talking about Russia and all those things, but no one is trying to fix. No one is paying attention. You know,
okay. Thank you so much. Okay. Thanks for that.
And this is a complaint specifically around this issue, but around many issues that politicians are unable to fix all of society's problems. I think this gun violence issue, as it becomes more frequent and it hits more and more homes, it's not just a city in Denver. It's not just a small town in Connecticut. It's not just Orlando. It's now becoming everywhere. And I think we're more and more likely to see some action.
Okay. And how does that affect the candidates and the parties here in this state? As we talked about a minute ago, we saw both Commissioner Putnam and Congressman DeSantis cancel their planned rallies in Jacksonville yesterday. One might guess it had to do with the fact that they didn't want to take questions about gun violence, the NRA, their positions. At the same time, most of the Democratic candidates for governor actually changed their schedules
to come here.
They could come here to Jacksonville after this horrific shooting at the landing and say, particularly, I think Gwen Graham said, she called out NRA lobbyist Marion Hammer by name at her event and said her time in this state is over. We are changing this state on this issue. And so the Democrats can't talk about this enough. The Republicans would rather not. And so, you know, in a purple state, how do you see this issue cutting as we get past the primary and move ahead to November?
Well, in an issue like this, where by and large, the large majorities of people look at this and say, this is terrible, and we need to do something about it. On the Republican side of the issue, the NRA and supporters of gun rights who fear a slippery slope of any intrusion into their gun rights have a losing issue on their hands in this one. But it's a bigger percentage of the Republican Party. So you're not going to want to speak to your base when you have an election today that's only of the right. Now, come November, it's going to be an interesting problem for whoever the Republican nominee is. How do you balance this? How do you balance the outrage from the caller we just heard, who represents a lot of people, versus the NRA and pro-Second Amendments that are fearful of a slippery slope and taking away their guns?
Right. And let's assume it's Ron DeSantis in November as the Republican nominee for governor. He will have the challenge of appealing to his base voters, but also those independent and moderate voters. Let's assume it's Gwen Graham as the Democratic nominee. She's got to hold her base and also capture that little sliver of voters in Florida that tends to decide elections.
Right. And if you're a Republican, it's not going to be this issue. You're talking about jobs, like Rick Scott did for the previous two successful elections he had.
Jobs. Whereas the Democrat will be talking about healthcare.
Healthcare, exactly.
And guns and other things. And let's go to Jordan in East Arlington. Hi, Jordan. Good morning.
Hey, it's AJ from East Arlington. How y'all doing this morning?
All right, thanks. Is it AJ with Mad Dads on the line?
Yeah, AJ with Matt.
Hey, AJ.
Thank you for that, Melissa.
Good to talk to you. Hey. So we've had such a terrible weekend in Jacksonville, and I know your organization's involved in trying to stop the gun violence in this city, so I applaud you for that. What are your thoughts right now?
Thank you. My question is, with the push for the younger voters to get out and vote this year, specifically in the governor's race, would that help more of Gilliam or Graham? And specifically, if Graham could get enough of the young voters to vote, would that push him over the top tonight?
Yeah. Okay, let's talk about that. Thanks for that, AJ. So Andrew Gilliam, the Tallahassee mayor, running this spirited progressive campaign, trying to fire up particularly young Democrats.
And Bernie Sanders' endorsement.
Exactly. Got an endorsement from Bernie Sanders. His argument is, Democrats don't do what you always do in Florida. Don't nominate a cautious centrist type like Gwen Graham. Nominate a real progressive to really fire up the Democratic base in November. Can Andrew Gilliam close that deal tonight?
I don't think that there's enough young people that are voting in primaries in August, particularly if you're thinking about young people, predominantly you're thinking about college students. First, second week back to school, a lot of these kids are potentially away from home. They're certainly unlikely to be registered in their school location. They would have had to have get an absentee ballot. They would have to get it in by 7 o'clock tonight.
There aren't early voting locations on college campuses.
No, there's not.
Yeah, that was a big controversy.
That's a whole other debate.
Yeah.
So it's harder for these folks to get their ballots in. They tend to vote much less frequently. It's unlikely that you're going to see that. Now, November might be a different issue, but in August, I suspect not.
Gilliam has run a remarkable campaign, though, in terms of coming from really very low in the polls to kind of surging here at the end, getting big national endorsements. Let's assume Gwen Graham pulls out a victory. Does she tap Gilliam as her running mate? Because they've become very contentious with each other. Certainly you wouldn't see DeSantis and Putnam teaming up
ticket. That will not be the case.
No love lost there. No. But would Gwen Graham pull an Andrew Gilliam onto her ticket to try to coalesce the moderate and progressive wings of her party?
Andrew Gilliam has a bright future in politics in this state. He's a very smart guy. He's good on the stump. And he's good at interviews. If I'm Gwen Graham and I'm lucky enough to win, and I think this is going to be close, those are people I'm looking at. Because if you look at Democrats throughout the state of Florida, the bench is not deep. There's very few Democrats with large name recognition. You've just gone through a primary that's given a handful of people some name recognition. I would certainly look to that group, and Andrew Gilliam seems like a really smart choice for her.
All right, let's go to Mark in St. Augustine. Hi, Mark. Good morning.
Hey, good morning. I kind of had a general question for your guest, and that is, I've always been in sales. Rule number one in sales is don't sell your product by slamming your competition. And in general, in political campaigns, we see candidates who just spend more time and money slamming their competitors than they do talking up their own merits. So has there been a campaign that has rejected that approach towards campaigning and one based on selling their own merits as opposed to telling you what your competition can or can't do?
Well, I think the short answer to that is anytime you see a heavily favored incumbent who's being challenged by somebody without very much money, they ignore the opponent. They don't talk about them, mm-hmm. and they win their elections. The problem is they were going to win anyway. In these tight races where it's competitive, you need to not only define yourself, but you need to define your opponent, because it's not just about, oh, I'm great, I'm wonderful. Sure, that might be the case, but if the other person is great and wonderful too, then suddenly you don't know who you're going to vote for. You need, in some ways, I don't want to say to slander because that's not the right way to go about it, but to draw distinctions. And because we're all people, and particularly in politics, people have to make some tough decisions sometimes. We have some baggage when you're running for office, and that gets pointed out. And it works is the problem. Sure, people claim they're turned off, but it works. And everybody remembers all the nicknames that Trump gave out to all of his candidates in 2016.
Yeah, well, we have it hasn't gotten to that level here in Florida between the candidates. Yeah. 549-2937. Lots of calls as we speak with UNF's Mike Binder this morning on this election day. Elizabeth is in the Intercoastal West area right now. Hey, Elizabeth, thanks for holding. Good morning to you.
Hi, Melissa. Thanks so much for having me on. I just wanted to say thank you to WJCT and the other news outlets that have been able to provide voter feedback so that people can go and find out about the candidates. The down ballot races are particularly important as well. The school board race has some big implications this year. There's a lot of unfunded mandates, and we have some legislation that's coming in that we really need to have some good policy on. I'm a licensed mental health counselor, so making sure that our children's mental health needs are taken care of and that we're able to use these dollars to better their education and increase their social emotional learning for our future, especially in light of all the violence that we've had going on this month in particular in Duval County, is really important. And that's why I decided to run for school board.
Okay.
So
thanks
please,
for that.
Please get out and vote, everybody.
Thanks, Elizabeth. Elizabeth is one of 17 candidates for three open positions on the Duval County School Board. These positions are very important. People need to pay attention to these.
She is 1,000% correct, particularly coming out of what happened down at Marjorie Stoneman and the changes at the state level as far as unfunded mandates for the Duval County, but in particular, because we live here, I'm talking about it, but all across the state, what they have to do, the choices they have to make with limited dollars, and the role that the school board plays in a lot of these decisions is vital. If you have kids that go to school in Duval County, you need to pay attention to these folks, and these are really meaningful votes.
And let's look at this through the prism, I guess, of November. As we get into the fall, this issue about school security, taking care of our kids, gun violence, that's going to come up again in the campaign for governor and U.S. Senate, by
yes,
the way.
Absolutely.
Between Rick Scott and Bill Nelson.
Who technically have primaries today.
Yeah, technically have primaries, but it's really the November contest for
right.
those two.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. And the problem is, yes, everybody says we need security at schools. Yes, everybody says we need mental health for our kids. But there's limited dollars. And how those dollars get allocated and how they get implemented, there are big divides on what the right thing to do is.
Let's go to, is it Marion in Ponte Vedra? Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you. You all touched earlier on getting information on the candidates, not to just vote by name, which for me is like pinning the tail on the donkey. And I've been able to distinguish issues for most of the candidates, but I'm really struggling with the judges finding their voting records or decisions on cases that are important to me. And if you all can help point me in a direction that would allow me to make an educated decision, that would really be helpful. Thank you.
Sure. And that is, again, like there are some judicial contests that we need to talk about quickly. Let's talk about, in particular here in Duval, the race between Maureen Horkin and Charles McBurney. That's a race that hasn't gotten a lot of attention, but it is important, and voters don't normally get the chance to vote on that type of bench seat. Normally, those positions are appointed by the governor, right, Mike? Right.
Yeah, it's a great opportunity, and I say that with a smirk on my face because just like the caller, what do we know about these folks? Now, McBurney had been in office, so you might know a little bit about his political history. He has a little bit of name recognition. But as far as what these folks may have done on the bench and maybe their limited history thereof, what they might do in the future, we're limited to the work that you folks have done and News for Jax with their candidate fill outs. And those are things that are where you can start to glean some information.
Now, I can tell you that the Florida Times Union has endorsed Maureen Horkin over Charles McBurney. It's the sole circuit judge election. We're talking about a former legislator, McBurney, and a former prosecutor, Horkin, both eminently qualified. But if you go to, as Mike said, Channel 4's website, our website, and also Jacksonville.com and search these names, you will find information about their background and their voting record. So right. I hope that's helpful to you, Marion. And okay, so turnout expected to be low today. I think Duval County Supervisor of Elections Mike Hogan says at the most we'll see 25 to 28% turnout, which is so disappointing.
It is, but it's actually higher than a lot of other primary races.
Yeah, it's
that
higher than normal. Isn't that right. Amazing?
Yeah.
And do you think that's being driven by just the polarization in this country? People fired up to vote because they're angry about certain issues, or perhaps the president, or they want to protect the president, whatever their motivation is.
I think the motivation is the fact that we have two very competitive gubernatorial races that have spent combined over $100 million on TV ads in just this electoral cycle alone. You have a meaningful vote for Democrats and Republicans. That's what's driving it up. And I'm driving it up is, you know, not very high. But the fact that there's not a lot outside some of these judge votes and outside some of the school board races and the tax collector race for NPAs to vote on. So they're not being driven to the polls. And NPAs are a third of our electorate here in Florida. So,
by the way, we're getting comments about that on our Facebook page. Perry writes, please discuss the fact that 3.4 million registered NPAs in Florida can't vote in the primary, and there is a grassroots citizens initiative working to get open primaries on the Florida ballot in 2020. That's a third of the electorate.
Yep. And now they can vote. They just can't vote for a party's nominee for governor or for Senate in this case.
Right. Any hope of that movement getting traction?
Several states have moved to a top two primary where essentially it's like Duval is, where everybody runs and the top two voters, assuming you don't get the 50%, show up in November. It's certainly possible. I don't think it's out of the – I don't know that it's on the agenda necessarily for this year or for next, but it's certainly a possibility.
Okay. With all of that said, keep it here on 89.9 throughout the day and beginning at 7 o'clock this evening for live coverage of full Florida primary election results. And get out and vote if you haven't already done so. The polls are open till 7 p.m. tonight. Mike Binder, who runs UNF's Public Opinion Research Lab, always providing great insights. Mike, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me. And go get your sticker. You show up and vote today, they give you a great sticker.
That's right. Get that sticker on. Much more still ahead, including our latest movable feast as we pay a visit to Congaree and Penn Farm. That's next.
Is your American Graduate Champion. WJCT is looking to recognize and honor a wide range of community leaders and everyday heroes who regularly dedicate their time, talent, and resources to prepare students for success and graduation. American Graduate Champions are role models in their communities whose stories have the potential to inspire others to take action. The nomination deadline is September 1st, 2018. Go to WJCT.org to nominate your American Graduate Champion today. WJCT's Jaguars season parking is still available. Be part of the coolest tailgating downtown. Includes paved space and indoor bathroom access. Contact Holly Manuel at 358-6311 or log on to wjct.org/parking. Reserve your space today.
Support for Movable Feast is made possible by 927 Events, event venue and catering.
Well, they are leaders in the farm-to-table movement here on the First Coast. In today's Movable Feast, our look at culinary trends all around town, Lee Cord of the Women's Food Alliance drops in on Scott Meyer and Chef Ryan Randolph at Congaree and Penn Farm.
Hannah, try the salami, Tommy. Give it to Gravy Davey. Everybody eats when they come to my house.
Congaree and Penn, that is one of the most interesting names for a farm. What does the name represent? How did you come up with this name?
Yeah, so the name Congaree and Penn actually comes from my mom's side of the family. They're all from Louisiana. She grew up in New Orleans, but her father actually captained the USS Congaree, which is a commandeered racing yacht that was in service during World War II. And it was actually destroyed in a dry dock about a year before we kind of reinvented a farm and Northwest Jacksonville that my father had been growing landscape trees on for the past decade or so, into a rice farm.
Wow, what a great history. It's so authentic. It's such a tribute to your family.
Mm-hmm. And then the Penn end of it is my mom's maiden middle name, Penn, or Pennington. I grew up, you know, helping my dad in some greenhouses and in the tree nurseries here in Jacksonville, but went back to school in environmental science and just have always enjoyed working outdoors. But, you know, wanting to get into farming was really kind of wanting to work with the landscape and become kind of a part of it. And that's something that drove me into agriculture.
You know, it's so amazing to be on a farm and to see things growing and almost not know what's out there. Can you describe some of the things that you're growing? You have become so popular in the Northeast Florida area with our chefs and restaurateurs and the events that you're doing. Walk us through your field.
Sure. So it all began in the beginning of 2014, where we started growing rice. And that's still widely what we're known for. However, that's actually the only annual crop that we grow. However, we quickly shifted to growing perennial crops and shrubs and vines and trees. So our largest planting is all in mayhaw trees, which is a native fruit-bearing hawthorn tree that is called a haw. The fruit is a haw. A lot of people refer to it as a berry. However, it's actually a haw that ripens up in May.
It's a haw, like an H-A-W?
An H-A-W.
So how did the May get connected to the haw?
That's when it's ripe. So right now we're picking our fruit. We have about 300 pounds of mayhaws we've picked out of the orchard so far this year, which is a big step up from the 20 pounds we had last year. And hopefully next year we'll break the 1,000 pounds mark and continue growing from there.
You probably have one of the greatest chefs in your team, and you're with us today, Ryan Randolph. Tell me about your relationship with Congaree and Penn and your role.
Yeah, I've been with Congaree now since November. It was just one of those partnerships that it just worked. I've dealt with and worked with Scott and Congaree, and you know, had their products for the past 4 years.
How do people who live in our region or who are visiting North Florida, how do they find you, and can they stop by? Is yours the kind of farm where they can find you, come off the road, because it's such a beautiful countryside area there, Scott? Can they come and visit and see rice growing in the field and blackberries? And
so we've got over 900 blackberry bushes, and they're loaded up with flowers. We had a really nice, consistently cool wintertime, and then we've had a nice kind of mild spring so far, and we've got both fruit that's already set and ripening up, and we still have some buds that haven't even flowered yet, but it's been incredible how healthy and vigorous these blackberries have been. But that's the reason we planted them, is that we had wild blackberries growing around the farm prior to planting them in organized rows, and it's just exciting to see how much production's coming out in just 1 year.
Well, I think it's great that the collaboration between you and your blackberries on the farm and Chef Ryan's blackberry-themed dinner sort of opens the door to Congaree and Penn for people to attend your themed dinners that you have right there on the farm. I can't imagine anything more delightful than to sit in the farm, in the center of the farm, look out at the beautiful trees and bushes, and eat one of your wonderful dinners, Ryan. So thank you so much for coming to Movable Feast today, and I will see you at the Blackberry Dinner and all the upcoming summer events.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much for having us.
Everybody eats when they come to my house.
Thanks, Lee. Well, right now we want to tell you about a company that treats your pet like part of the family. Pet Paradise was founded in 2002 in St. Augustine, and it has grown to dozens of pet resorts around the country and even the first pet park inside an NFL stadium at our own TIAA Bank Field. This is a cool story, and in this month's First Coast Success, Karen Bruni Mathis, editor at the Jacksonville Daily Record, talks to Pet Paradise president Fernando Acosta Rua.
Fernando Acosta Rua leads Pet Paradise as president and CEO. A graduate of the University of Florida with a journalism degree and Northwestern University, where he earned an MBA, Acosta Rua led an investment group in 2004 to invest in Pet Paradise. Today, Pet Paradise is expanding, including adding a dog park at TIAA Bankfield. Fernando Acosta Rua, welcome to First Coast Success.
Thank you, Karen. Thanks for having me here.
Well, before we talk about Pet Paradise, let's talk about you and your family. Your mother and father are community icons. Share about your parents and your family growing up.
Yeah, no, I'm very, very blessed to have the parents that I have and had. My mother came from Spain. She grew up in Spain, and my father was from Cuba, and he fled Cuba to pursue medical school, which he had started in Cuba until Fidel came, and they met up in Spain in medical school where they both finished, came to the United States, went to Cleveland and Iowa, and then ultimately to Jacksonville. So we came here in 1972, and my father was a neurosurgeon with the Lyerly Neurosurgical Group, and my mother was one of the first, or the first child psychiatrist in Jacksonville. So that's where we started in 1972 here in Jacksonville, and have been living here off and on for basically all my life.
And talk about pursuing a journalism degree and then an MBA. Did you work as a journalist?
You know, I worked one summer in public relations. I worked for Fleischmann Hillard in Los Angeles. Very exciting. We had the Budweiser contract was one of the big ones. I really enjoyed and still enjoy the writing aspect of it. So I was a public relations major in the School of Journalism with a minor in economics. So I got a little bit of a taste of the economics piece of it, which I ended up then in the future, I ended up going to business school and pursuing finance and then private equity and then investments. But I've always loved the journalism and the writing, and I think it really does make you a better speaker, allows you to get your thoughts together, and it's a skill set that I still use today.
Well, what path did you take that led you to Pet Paradise?
So I was in private equity in investments. So as a private equity professional, you're looking at a ton of different investment opportunities, and maybe one or two out of 100 are really worth pursuing. And when we moved back to Jacksonville in 2003, there was a gentleman named Fred Goldsmith, who was the founder of Pet Paradise, and he was looking to raise funds to kind of build out his first prototype, Jacksonville Airport, which was the first Pet Paradise prototype. And long story short, we started talking. It made a lot of sense from an investment standpoint. It's the pet industry is very fragmented. It's very large, very resilient to ebbs and flows of the economy. So it had a lot of positive attributes that attracted me to it. And we ended up investing in 2005, my private equity group, and then did follow-on investments in 2007. I left the private equity group and joined Pet Paradise full time and been here ever since.
Talk about how Fred Goldsmith decided that he needed to get involved in creating Pet Paradise.
So he actually had dropped his pet off at a resort, or it, resort's a big name for what it was. It was basically a kennel, but had some kind of thoughts in terms of kind of the next generation of pet boarding. And when he went to pick up, he picked up his dog, Samantha, a Bichon, who he tells this story a lot, had like a $500 bill. And he's like, wow, that's a lot for boarding, and tried to make a reservation for the next week. And they said, sorry, we're full. And the light bulb kind of went off in his head. He was a serial entrepreneur. He was an early Wendy's franchisee, started a technology company. So he was always kind of looking at the next big thing, and came across this idea. And they developed, he and a group of founding investors developed the first prototype concept at Jacksonville Airport, which people are going to be traveling. So it had that kind of appeal to it. Large indoor-outdoor suites with in-ground swimming pools, artificial turf grass, and that was the very first one. And once they opened that one, we ended up doing an expansion of that a year and a half later. So it took off right off the bat and started growing ever since. So that's kind of the process behind how they really started Pet Paradise.
What differentiates Pet Paradise within the industry?
I think a lot of things. Primarily, it's the people. At the end of the day, we are in the trust business, peace of mind business. When someone drops their pet off with you, it's their child. It really is, in a lot of cases, their child. It's a family member. So we have a big responsibility. So we put a lot of a focus on getting the right employees and training them. Now, the facilities are very beautiful. They're large. They have very spacious. We really do make them with the mindset of what would I like if I were a dog? I know that sounds a little silly, but it's really true. I mean, there's a lot of places that have silly things that really aren't in the best interest of the pet, but they just seem kind of, you know, funny or whimsical. We really look at large areas, air conditioning, where they can come in and out and play, in-ground swimming pools, a lot of fun, a lot of excitement, get the pets tired when they go home. That's one of the biggest compliments we get is my dog was really tired when he picked up and I can go home and do my things. And I know my dog had a good time, but it really starts with the people. And that's really the big differentiator in any business, really. It comes to the people that you hire and really train and then retain. And I think that's what our secret formula is at Pet Paradise, is really having the best people.
Fernando Acosta Rua, President and CEO of Pet Paradise, thank you for joining First Coast Success.
Thanks for that. Karen Bruni Mathis, a regular contributor here on the show. She is the editor of the Jacksonville Daily Record. You can look them up online or pick up their paper copies all around downtown Jacksonville. Now, if you're just tuning in, it is Election Day across Florida. And if you haven't already voted, the polls are open until 7 o'clock tonight. So get out and vote. Just a couple of statistics for you. Statewide totals released early Monday show that turnout is about 14%. That seems low, but there have been nearly 1.9 million ballots already cast. So already more activity than in a presidential election when it comes to early voting. And for the first time ever, Democrats have overtaken Republicans in early voting in the state. On Sunday, candidates and supporters mobilized Souls to the Polls marches to early voting sites. On the ballot, races for governor and a slew of other races, depending on what part of the state you live in. Polls will be open till 7 o'clock tonight. Get out and choose your candidate for governor, attorney general, agriculture commissioner, along with local and regional races, everything from school board candidates to judges here in Duval County. There's a primary race for tax collector. That's an important position, too. A few more stats for you. Pinellas County became the number one vote by mail county over the weekend. Miami-Dade, a close second. And Hillsborough came in third, although I suspect the early voting totals here in our own Duval County are pretty high, too. So no excuse, people. Let's get that turnout higher than they predict. It is election day. It is primary day. So get out and vote and choose your candidates who will represent you here in Florida. We will have live extended coverage of all the results here at 89.9 and online at wjctnews.org. Beginning at 7 p.m. tonight, as I'll be joined here in studio by UNF's Matt Corrigan, our own regular contributor Charles Griggs, and Daniel Cronrath of FSCJ. So make sure to listen tonight as well. And in a moment, why Friday is the day that you could find that special someone. We'll tell you about International Matchmaker Day right after this.
The next Fresh Air. We remember comic playwright and screenwriter Neil Simon. He died Sunday at age 91. We'll listen back to our 1996 interview. And we'll start our series of interviews with Emmy nominees. We'll hear from John Oliver, whose satirical news show Last Week Tonight is nominated for Outstanding Variety Talk Series. Join us today at noon on 89.9 WJCT, your community, your world.
I'm Marco Werman. PRI's The World brings you more than just a day's news.
Well, the poor old British pub has been around for 2,000 years.
We introduce you to people around the globe.
I'm a Liberian, but I'm part of Africa.
If we were only in Argentina.
I think it's a Scottish thing, you know? This sense of doom there, but it's always kind of amusing to us.
Join us and hear The World this afternoon at 3 on 89.9 WJCT. Agencies are in the business of regulation. It's been that way for decades.
Environmental activities, economic activities, the war on drugs, federal law enforcement, financial transactions, and many, many others.
I'm Kai Rizdahl. Those who write the rules have the regulatory power. That's next time on Marketplace.
Weeknights at 6 on 89.9 WJCT.
The latest issue of Vogue is making news, not just for who's in it, but for the control it gave to the woman on the cover. Beyoncé's Vogue takeover speaks volumes about the changing relationship between the media and creators of color. What are they saying? And who's listening? Next time on 1A.
Today at 11 on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome back. Well, finally this hour. If you are looking for love, Jacksonville's premier matchmaker has a way to help find it for you in celebration of this Friday's National Matchmaker Day. That's right. One True Match is partnering with Diamonds Direct to help bring people together this Friday. One True Match founder Renee Rochelle is here with more. And good morning.
Good morning.
Good to see you. And you are actually a matchmaker. It makes me think of Fiddler on the Roof. You know, matchmaker, matchmaker. It's so old fashioned, but it's a modern thing as well. Tell me about what you do.
Well, the benefits of hiring a matchmaker is we start off with a consultation before we even start working with a client. And that really helps us to determine if we can find somebody compatible for them, because that's the most important reason you would hire a matchmaker. There's obviously a screening process for safety and security. I always say it's cost saving. So you're saving time and money. You know, you're not paying for the date. You're paying for the search and the interviews we go through. And then, you know, the money you're investing is to find that right person. So you're not dating somebody blind and you don't know who they are down the road.
Right.
You discover.
And whereas if you went to one of the big dating websites, you'd have a million candidates to screen through yourself.
Yeah.
Right?
And everybody can put on a great front, but then you realize who they are and the time wasted of heartache and, you know, things that don't work out. So, you know, a matchmaker's full-time job is to basically be your best friend, get to know the client, and really spend that time looking for, you know, it's like having a concierge service for your love life, finding that person for you. And obviously, you know, we're faith-based, so we've found with experience that it shows most people were looking for the values based on their faith and, you know, morals that they want in a lifetime partner.
Okay. And so because Friday is National Matchmaker Day,
yeah,
you have a very special opportunity for a lucky single out there to find not only love, but diamonds.
Yes,
that sounds good. That
I
sounds
know.
Good.
The two go well together.
Yes, they do. So what's going on with all of this?
Well, so our Let Us Find You, Your One True Match contest is, you know, it's an exciting opportunity for singles to win love. And we say a luxury piece of bling. It's a gorgeous diamond heart pendant from, you know, as you've said, we've partnered up with Diamonds Direct. So they are receiving, you know, this is all for singles to encourage them to register to win. They're receiving a complimentary match from our database along with a professional makeover and photo shoot.
Nice.
And a stunning 14-karat white gold heart-shaped pendant from Diamonds Direct.
How cool is that? So if people go onto your website, they enter and you're just going to pick a winner at random this Friday?
We are. So this Friday obviously is the day. So we'll pick a lucky winner. And today kind of through the rest of the week, we're We're actually delivering and handing out these heart-shaped cute cookies to the downtown area.
You brought me one. I can't wait to try it.
So good. I know. They're very good.
Now, this is a cool contest. This is worth thousands of dollars to whoever wins.
Yes.
So a nice value there.
Yeah. And a lot of it, we just hear, you know, a lot of people say when our clients are, we talk about, they just don't know we exist. So we said, you know, let's start sharing the love and putting it out there so that people can find their one true match.
Yes, exactly right. And again, if you enter this contest right now, they will pick a winner at random on Friday, which is National Matchmaker Day. If you go to onetruematch.com for more, just go and enter there. It's the number onetruematch.com. And then going beyond the contest, Renee, you have events going all through the year to help singles find love. And by the way, Jacksonville is one of the, I think, one of the youngest major cities in Florida, which people don't realize.
Yeah.
Lots of people out there are single and looking.
Right, exactly. And when I started this almost over 8 years ago now, it was really the old, you know, 50 to 60 year old market. But in the last couple of years, it's been great. We've been really working with 27 to 40 year old clients, too. So we have these in a private mansion, like single retreats. For, you know, we were never taught relationship skills, but it's kind of a weekend retreat and that they can get to know one another too. And hey, you might find love along the way. So all that information is obviously on our website, as well as dating tips and things like that.
People could probably use a few of those,
yes.
Right? I would think, especially if you have a client who's maybe been married a long time, widowed and divorced or whatever. They need a little help getting back into the dating game, don't they?
They do. And one of my favorite stories, they're getting married this winter, is that she was a widow. And so there's nothing more exciting than walking through the journey of finding them that second love and watching them, you know, fall in love with them. So
sure. And you have those success stories on your website. And
yeah.
So enter now at One True Match. That's the number onetruematch.com. It's an amazing contest. In conjunction with Friday's National Matchmaker Day, you'll receive a complimentary match from Renee's database, a makeover, a mini photo shoot, and a stunning 14-karat white gold heart-shaped pendant from Diamonds Direct for one lucky winner. So nothing to lose if you enter now online. And if you see Renee around town, she's going to give you a really nice heart-shaped cookie, which I'm going to have in a moment. So thank you for the cookie, too.
No problem.
All right. We need extra fuel on this election day. We're going to have a long day.
I know. We have to spread the love, you know?
That's right. That's right. Well, thanks, Renee.
Thank you.
And that's our show. Thanks to all of our guests and callers. I'm Melissa Ross. And as I mentioned, be sure to join us tonight beginning at 7 p.m. as we bring you live primary election results. You can hear them here on 89.9 and see live updates as well at WJCT.org. Thanks for listening. 1A's up next, and get out and vote, everybody. Have a great day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.